The views expressed in this interview are those of the individuals and do not reflect the official policy or position of the U.S. government, the Department of Defense, the U.S. Navy, or the Naval Postgraduate School. Welcome to the Trident Room, brewer of stout conversation, unfiltered and on tap. On today's episode, host Elena Youngblood and senior producer Sarah Dixon highlight reports from guests at the Hotel Del Monte of various spiritual encounters and attempt to connect them to the hotel's exciting and dramatic past. Hello, friends, and welcome to another Trident Room podcast episode. I am a new host for you. I am Lieutenant Commander Elena Youngblood, and I'm sitting here with Major Sarah Dixon, a veteran in the Trident Room podcast team. We are going to speak to you about the history and the hauntings of the Del Monte Hotel.
Let's start with this. When you mentioned this idea to me at first, you were intrigued or inspired by some sort of murder mystery or just mystery theme, something, right? What was your inspiration to even start your research on this topic?
Well, I personally love supernatural things. And so there's podcasts, there's the Supernatural or Supernatural with Ashley Flowers podcast. And I love ghosts and I love ghost stories and I love talking about them, relating my own to other people. And I think other people love hearing ghost stories or the shock factor of knowing that they stayed in a haunted place, but they didn't know. And I think if we were to talk about this and tell people that there is a place where that can be recorded, maybe more people that were like, nah, that didn't happen. Or they'll find similarities of like, oh no, that happened to me, but I thought I was the only one and I didn't say anything. And so they'll report more, and future ghost hunters or future investigators will be able to have more data points.
I'll admit, I heard that the Hotel Del Monte here on campus was haunted, but I was, okay, sure. I've lived in old buildings before, right? Everything's haunted. And then you came to one of our meetings and you were like, no, there's a logbook. And for any listener who doesn't know the military, a logbook is like a legal record. So when you say there's a logbook, for me, that's like, oh crap, this is real.
Yeah.
It's in a logbook. Yeah. So yeah, there's a logbook that's kept at the hotel's front desk.
Yes. Okay. So getting into it, the Hotel Del Monte, it is a hotel that is on the Naval Postgraduate School campus. And currently they have 217 rooms. So kind of a small hotel, but still large for a small campus. Their rates go from like 134 to 161, depending on the season.
It's not bad.
So yeah, at the front desk, when you check in, you go through the central doors. It's kind of a majestic campus kind of thing. You go past the flag. So you go to the front desk and you can actually ask to see, and they'll pull it out. They're very excited. It has like a blue cover. So it's a bit different than what we've got in our normal military daily lives of the green notebook, but it's the same shape, same size. It's at the front desk, and it's, I think, from 2010-ish. I've got the stats later, but about 2010-ish onward, it's got people that have stayed that have crazy stories all logged in handwriting in that book. So yeah, you can go through it. So I took pictures of all of that and then tried to find where they matched in history. Going through the logbook itself, I have the ghost stats for when we're done with the history and can kind of compare and see what's going on. There were 57 stories.
So 2010, you say, was when the logbook was started?
Yeah.
How many pages?
There's 57 entries from 2010 to now, but some of those stories had multiple different things that have happened.
Oh.
So when I go through this many of this incident happened, if you're checking my math, it won't add up because there are multiple incidents per story sometimes.
Okay.
The hotel is the Hotel Del Monte. It was actually created by a Charles Crocker. A little bit about him. So Charles Crocker, he was born in Troy, New York in 1822. And he was actually one of the founders of the Central Pacific Railroad. So the Central Pacific Railroad Company was chartered by Congress in 1862 to complete the western portion of the first transcontinental railroad. And that portion actually reached from Sacramento, California to Ogden, Utah. I think they started June 1861 and finished April 85. Obviously, railroads were super important to Mr. Crocker, and he had this dream of a fantasy resort, of a posh luxury resort, that's the word. So he had a dream of a luxury resort that was reachable by train. At this point in time in the United States, that wasn't a thing. There was none. This was actually the first of its kind.
Oh.
Had never been done before. In June of 1880, Crocker opened the Hotel Del Monte. It was deemed Crocker's folly. People knew that he was trying to do this, and everyone was like, this guy doesn't understand what's happening. No one is going to go. He's going to lose all of his money.
Folly definitely has some foreshadowing if people of the time were calling it Crocker's Folly.
So the original hotel was actually built in a Victorian era style. If you know anything, or if you're listening and you've seen the Del Monte or you've visited a Del Monte, you know it's clearly not Victorian. The original design was in fact Victorian era, which I think was all the rage back in this time. It included 7,000 acres.
Whoa.
So that's not
7,000 acres?
7,000 acres. And that is not what we have currently. We're a little bit less than that. It did boast a 125-acre botanical garden. And this botanical garden had plants from over 60 different countries. But it only had 100 suites, a little over 100 suites and guest rooms. So I told you earlier that it's 217 now, so it started at only just over 100. Now remember, we said it was Crocker's Folly. It made over $11,300 in its first month.
Wow.
That's not that much today. However, that's back in the day, so I did a little calculation. With inflation.com, whatever website, that $11,300 in just the first month would mean that it was $350,865 today in 1 month. He actually had to turn down 3,000 reservations in the first 6 weeks. Didn't have enough rooms. What turned out to be Crocker's Folly, or was termed Crocker's Folly, was actually literally one of the best ideas he's ever had. He showed them, is all I'm saying. As I started researching, the amount of things that were integral or part of the identity of Monterey, like how many of those things kind of owe their origins to this hotel being built, it just blew my mind. One of those things were excursions were available to the guests. They would be taken away to the scenic countryside in carriage, and it would take hours. This particular carriage excursion originally was over 18 miles, but they decided to later shorten it to 17.
And we have 17-mile drive today. Oh, so I actually did a quick Google search. 1 square mile is 640 acres. So 17 miles would be over 10,800 acres. This says square miles, but so 17 miles probably took them down off the property.
They would like be picked up from the hotel, and then they'd be where we have 17-mile drive. That's where they would go in the carriage and be taken around in that excursion. So it's like an all-day trip. But basically, the whole thing that people come here to go see, 17-mile drive, that came from the guest excursions from the original Hotel Del Monte establishment.
Wow, that's a pretty cool historic fact. I feel like people know 17-mile drive because of the beauty, and it is a toll road. Like you have to pay to just drive it and access it.
I would venture to say it's known throughout the country. I would almost venture to say it's known internationally.
I did always wonder why it was called 17 Mile Drive, because if you've driven it per your odometer, it's not 17 miles.
Yeah.
Now I know the history of 17 Mile Drive.
It was first by carriage. And so they're like, 18 is way too long. We'll do 17. So that was a success. Another cool historical fact was that Rutherford B. Hayes became the first sitting president to visit California because he wanted to visit the Del Monte Hotel.
Ooh, that's cool.
Yeah. So the first ever president to come to California did so in order to visit.
Because he was enticed by a luxury resort.
Reached by railroad, yes. Yep. Other cool, notable guests that, I mean, they're cool to me, include celebrities over the years, President Theodore Roosevelt, Clark Gable, Carol Lombard, Marilyn Dietrich, Amelia Earhart, Charles Lindbergh, Ernest Hemingway, Mary Pickford, Charlie Chaplin, Bob Hope, Bing Crosby, and Ginger Rogers.
Those three definitely make sense that they'd be visiting here.
Yeah. If you have stayed at the Hotel Del Monte, you have stayed in very prestigious company, a list of people that have stayed here.
That's pretty cool. I have stayed one night.
I have not. I have never stayed here. I always travel with pets, and they have very few pet rooms available.
Aaron and I stayed here the night of the Marine Corps birthday ball. We didn't want to drive the 3 miles home, so I just got a hotel room.
So one of the reasons that I did this historical research and then got absolutely fascinated and went down so many rabbit holes was first to try and find where these ghosts came from, to see if there's any historical events that could like link to or explain some of the encounters that people have been having.
So we don't have any ghosts yet in the history.
No.
Do we want to talk about the ghosts now?
So I'm going to tell you, we're coming up on our first death. That's why I did that little segue. In October 14th, 1885, the hotel did have the first guest that passed away inside its walls 5 years after it opened.
That's not that long.
No. The first death is actually a gentleman named Henry Wheeler Shaw, but most people will probably know him by his pen name that is Josh Billings. He was born in April 21st, 1818, in Lanesboro, Massachusetts. He worked as a farmer, a coal miner, an explorer, and an auctioneer before finally becoming a humorous writer and was often compared to Mark Twain in his works. So very, very well known, kind of a Renaissance man, as it were. He is actually attributed to a lot of really cool quotes that we still use today. One of those is, quote, "In the whole history of the world, there is but one thing that money cannot buy, to wit, the wag of a dog's tail," end quote. And that is actually the opening of Disney's Lady and the Tramp.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was going to say, I just Googled Josh Billings. Of course, I went to Wikipedia first. Just for the quick synopsis. Yeah, you hit all the wickets. It even shows a picture of his gravesite in Massachusetts. But yeah, that's pretty cool.
Another thing that I really, really thoroughly enjoyed finding out about him is that he wrote a poem called The Kicker. I'm going to read it to you and tell me why this poem is interesting, right? Okay, the poem goes, "I hate to be a kicker. I always long for peace. But the wheel that does the squeaking is the one that gets the grease."
Oh my gosh, he wrote the poem about the squeaky wheel?
Squeaky wheel gets the grease. Yep. Whoa. Yep. How many times have you used that in your military career or any just like life in general?
All the time. Can I highlight something that I just read? So I was taking a look at the Wikipedia page. Uh-huh. And being an English major, I'm a huge John Steinbeck fan.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And something that has nothing to do with the history of the hotel, but we're right down the street, not just from 17 Mile, but from Cannery Row. Yep. And Cannery Row is the title of one of John Steinbeck's books.
It's actually been nominated for one of my book club books. Yes.
Well, this is from Wikipedia, so I'm not going to like cite the source, but it says Josh Billings' death, who died in Monterey, California on October 14th, like you said, 1885, his death is described in chapter 12 of John Steinbeck's fictional book, Cannery Row. So that's pretty cool.
It is. It's all connected. Yeah. And it's just crazy how connected and how deep it goes and how cool little nuggets you can find on this historical gem. His stuff also goes to King Kong movie Revenge, a Love Story. It ends with his quote of, "There is no revenge so complete as forgiveness." So he was also a prankster, and I'm going to highlight this because it's going to come back a little bit later in my own kind of suspicions of some stuff that have happened. So he was a prankster. He was expelled from Hamilton College during his second year for removing the clapper out of the campus bell.
I feel like I know some people who would totally do that. Yeah. And would, so I know people who...
I wonder if that's what the official record was, because I feel like that's kind of a strong result to a quite innocent prank. It's a very effective one. Yeah. But to be yeah, you just like, don't come back. Like, we're done with you.
You and I both went to the Naval Academy. I feel like it was the thing.
That was like the love language of all the midshipmen.
Yeah, yeah. Pranks and what do we call it? Spirit missions.
Quote with the air quotes, yes.
But I feel like if you remove the clapper, is the term of from the bell. Class. Yeah.
I guess everybody was late to class. Like, they couldn't hear
it. Oh, that's funny. Yeah. That's funny.
To recap, we've got our first death, October 14th, 1885. Moving on, we have our first fire shortly after. It happened on April 1st.
April Fool's Day.
Of 1887. So the whole structure of the Del Monte Hotel burned down.
Wow.
There is no documented cause that I could find for this fire. But I'm just going to say, Mr. Billings had already passed away. April 1st, I was actually curious. I was like, April 1st, we know to be a prankster holiday. He got expelled for being a prankster. So I was like, would April 1st, as we know it, have been around as a thing when he passed away? So I researched it. April Fools actually came into existence around, well, there's various histories, but the one that most people agree upon is that in 1582, in France, the government switched from the Julian calendar, which celebrated the new year on April 1st, to the Gregorian calendar that then celebrates, as we have it, January 1st. The year of 1582 is when that switch happened. So in 1582, they celebrated New Year's on January 1st. Those people that were slow on the uptake, that were slow to get the news or to get the understanding of the change, celebrated their New Year's Day on April 1st and were called April Fools.
Whoa.
So that is where April Fool's Day.
That's an old school, like, day.
Yeah. So definitely would have been a thing. I'm not saying maybe it was his first one and it went a little awry. I don't know. But there's no documented cause. We had a prickster that had already passed in the hotel. I'm just saying. The fire did burn everything down, but Mr. Crocker was able to rebuild quickly. The renovations saw new east and west wings to support the customer demand. He actually had to, I think he had to get a grant, and there had to be like some sort of court meeting of the county for this. And the manager of the hotel had to go and swear under oath that they had 17,000 guests stay the year before just to be able to get permission to build these.
Oh, they had to validate expanding the building.
Yes.
This was even before building codes, which is interesting.
I know. So I guess I don't, you know, a whole hotel, I guess twice over is a little bit much of an expense.
Depending on the population of the town at the time.
So that fire was in 1887. And then, so this is kind of quick succession. We have a death in 85, we have fire in 87, and then Mr. Crocker himself died in the hotel August 14th of 1888.
No known record of anyone dying in the fire of 1887.
No, there was absolutely no records. And in fact, almost kind of the opposite of everyone saying that there was kind of a thing of known, like nobody was hurt, or it might've been injuries, but there's no deaths during that fire. But then he died a year and 4 months after that fire, probably right when the new renovations were happening, or at least the new opening.
Maybe he wanted to stay in the new opening. He wanted to stay in one of the rooms. Yeah. And
so that was 1888. We have kind of a jump from this death to the next event, I will say. And the next event happens in 1906. If you are kind of like me and you know environmental stuff, or you do environmental forecasting, you kind of will probably know 1906. You just got excited. What did you?
I was nerding out with fault lines and volcanic activity.
Yes.
Literally right before we recorded this episode. So I know exactly what you're going to say. And Mount St. Helens, right? It was an earthquake.
It was an earthquake. Yes. But tectonic plates, you're completely right. So the 1906, the Great Earthquake of San Francisco, it's called the Great Earthquake, or it's known as the Great Earthquake, happened in 1906. And it hit San Francisco so much more than anybody else because of the foundations of which the buildings were built. And that foundation is actually a different foundation than here in Monterey. And when I say foundation, I mean like the actual earth foundation.
The bedrock or the type of rock.
It's different to where Monterey is a little bit more protected and San Francisco was not. If you are not familiar with the Great Earthquake of San Francisco, it happened on April 18th, again, April, at 0512 or 512 a.m. for non-military folks. That was when the city felt the foreshock. Foreshocks are a thing. They actually happen, or they precede a larger earthquake, but if you are in the moment, you will not know whether or not that is a foreshock or if that's actually the earthquake. You'll only know after kind of like a post-investigation type thing. But at 0512, there was a foreshock. Oh, and actually, to back up, you'll know a foreshock after an investigation. And there's actually statistics that say the probability that a quake is a foreshock in California specifically is 6%. And they are smaller in magnitude than the aftershock.
Right. Okay.
So they're smaller than the earthquake itself, obviously, but they're even smaller than the aftershocks. There are differences between fore and aftershocks. The big quake, or the actual main earthquake, followed the foreshock by about 20 to 25 seconds.
Whoa, that's really fast.
Really fast. It was an estimated strength of 7.9 to 8.25, and it lasted up to 60 seconds, which is a really long time if you're like freaking shaking and everything's falling down around you.
That is a really long time.
At the time, the death records were quoted to be about 700, but it's generally believed that that was completely underestimated. Today's numbers, after investigating and kind of looking at historical records and kind of where people went, it's believed that the true death count was actually 21 to 28,000.
In just San Francisco. Wow.
Yep. It created a fire. There was looting. It was just a very, very bad time. Now, as I said, back in the Monterey area, there wasn't too much damage. I did find an accounting and the details of this particular earthquake in a letter from a Monterey resident, Silas N. Mack, to his mother, Clara W. Mack, who actually was living in Canada at the time, according to the postage. He stated that there was a terrible noise and the houses swayed for about 5 seconds, that there was about $1 million in damage back in the day, which is now $35,1,880,000, and that troops from Presidio of Monterey rode out to enforce martial law in San Francisco and to protect San Jose from looters.
Wow.
Yep. But this letter actually does say what happened at the Del Monte in detail. It goes through a whole paragraph of what happened specifically at the Del Monte, which is why I looked at it.
Did he work at
I don't know if he worked or if he just he knew and he was writing to his mother like, I'm fine, here's what actually happened. He wrote that at the time the Del Monte Hotel had about 40 chimneys in use, and that's what they had been using to heat the rooms. At this moment they had been rendered non-necessary because they had just started to use steam to heat the rooms, but they hadn't taken down the chimneys yet. So the earthquake kind of helped them, as I will say, because about 20 of them fell. So about half of the chimneys fell. All but one fell in a way that didn't hit anybody. One of them fell on the roof and actually fell through the roof onto a couple that were actually newlyweds, and they were honeymooning in their room at 5:15 in the morning. They were sleeping in their bed. It fell onto them and actually pushed them from their room through their floor into the room below.
Wow.
That was both the event and then also two following deaths for that event that had been recorded.
The San Francisco 1906 earthquake caused enough shakes through Monterey that chimneys fell and crushed.
One chimney fell and hit a newlywed couple. I actually didn't find any other death records for that particular event, just those two in all of Monterey.
Oh, in all of Monterey.
Yeah. Now, don't quote me on that. That's just what I could find.
So now that's a total of four deaths. Yeah. Inside the hotel.
Yep. We have one more incident to go over in the history of the hotel. In 1924, oh wait, I do have to say one cool thing that I found out. We had the 1906, but then in 1919, we have a new owner.
So I was actually wanted to ask that because since the original owner died in the hotel in 1888, who was the owner after he died?
I don't have the records for that. I can only assume that it went to his family or that kind of thing. And then in between 1888 and 1919, that was kind of like some family owned or somebody from the will or executor took over during that time. But in 1919, a Samuel F.B. Morse bought the Del Monte. And of course, as you do, purchased an additional 18,000 acres that will then become known as Pebble Beach in Carmel
Valley. The luxury resort that Hotel Del Monte has now expanded in 1919 to include what we know today as Pebble Beach and Carmel by the Sea.
Yep.
Wow. Some wealthy landowners there.
Yeah. This guy was born in April 27th of 1791 in Charleston, Massachusetts. Again, Massachusetts is really coming in strong for the Del Monte Hotel. He was an established portrait painter. He was best known for contributing to the invention of a single wire telegraph and being a co-developer of the Morse code.
Because his last name's Morse.
It is the co-developer of the Morse code purchased the Del Monte Hotel.
Well, it's a good thing you didn't include him in one of the cool people who stayed here list that you talked about earlier, because I feel like that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's kind of like we use that a little bit in military history, just a tad.
The guy who invented Morse code is also owned property we're now sitting on.
The Del Monte Hotel, where Naval Postgraduate School sits. Yep. Just, I mean, the connections are just, I mean, they're too easy. They're too easy. So he actually was known for, he reinvigorated the hotel as more of a, like, he's obviously luxury, but also with the sports mecca that we kind of associate Monterey with today. So like the golf and the outdoor sports and, I mean, just everything that we know about kind of the outdoor life of Monterey came from this guy reinvigorating everything in that direction after he purchased the hotel.
He's probably why we have tennis courts on campus.
He's probably exactly why. It has to be him. So he purchased it in 1919 after the quake and was around for our final tragic event on campus or on property. And that was the 1924 fire. So there is another fire. This is the second fire at the hotel. It happened September 27th. It is believed. So this one did have kind of a precipitating event. It was believed to have been from chimney sparks. So those chimneys are really not doing well for the.
So they must either not torn them all down and closed them up. And so they must have been or built more. Whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I like a good ambiance. Like I like a good wood burning stove. So I'm sure there's something going on there. But it was believed to be from the chimney sparks that sparked this 1924 fire. And it burned down the whole of the central building. So again,
they built on an east wing, they built on a west wing. But this fire in 1924 only burned down the central building.
The central building. I'm sure it impacted them, but it did do the entire whole building, which was the only building that was available for the first fire. So it's like that central building got burned down twice with these two fires, but at least not the wings that were later on added. Because it was again burned down, Morse worked with architects. I believe there were two. I don't quote me on their names, but I believe there were two. And he decided to change the Victorian style into the Spanish Revival Hotel Del Monte, which is what we see today.
Oh.
So he is in charge of that entire transition from the Victorian era style to the Spanish revival style that we see now.
Have you been down to the Hotel Del in San Diego? Yes. That's on Coronado. That's very Victorian. So that just makes me interested. Having been down to the Hotel Del on Coronado in San Diego, I'm like, oh, that's very Victorian. And then like, oh, the Hotel Del Monte here at, in Monterey, it's no longer Victorian. Nope. It is now in Spanish Revival.
So this new hotel, the Spanish Revival Look, opened in May of 1926. But I will tell you the other thing that I looked at whenever I was looking at this flyer, going back into, but you know, back 2 years ago from the opening, was that that was a hard time. That was a hard time for Monterey firefighters because the Del Monte Hotel was only the second fire that week that they had to go. Before that, on September 14th, lightning struck a 55,000-gallon oil tank located at the current-day Coast Guard Pier.
Whoa.
It burned for 3 days and included five other tanks ultimately. So a huge, huge fire.
Wow. That's a huge impact to the economy too.
Yes. According to records, three soldiers from Presidio in Monterey, again, just kind of highlighting the continual military presence and his and support to local populace. Three soldiers from Presidio in Monterey, Sergeant Beans, Corporal Evans, and Private Bolio, lost their lives fighting the fire.
That's why we have the Bolio Gate over at Presidio of Monterey Army Base.
Yep. This particular fire cost $1.5 million in damage, or just shy of $53 million damage today. It has, as you said, an untold impact on the environment. That's what happened first. And then just a few days later, the fire in Hotel Del.
Yeah. So the oil barrel fires, yes, which they fought for 3 days. And then because of a chimney fire.
A chimney fire. Yeah. Chimney sparks. They had to fight a whole nother hotel fire. So they were very, very exhausted and spread thin, those firefighters.
Wow. Did we lose anybody in the hotel in that fire?
There has been no documents that we lost anybody. But there was a fire. There was trauma. I'll get into kind of local legends when we start talking about the ghosts. But according to the records, the official records that I looked at, there were no deaths recorded in the hotel fire. Just the three deaths, I'm sure there was more, but at least for the military-wise, there was the three deaths fighting the original oil tank fires. So that was the 1924 fire. Then 2 years later, in May 1926, we have a new Spanish Revival Hotel Look. And then things kind of even out a little bit after that. Things kind of take a nice turn for us in the Navy. In 1942, the Navy took over the hotel to use as pre-flight school for aviators. In 1943, we have our first Navy presence. So in addition to the Spanish Revival style, Mr. Morris added six little tiny cottages that you can see today between the academic buildings and the sides of the hotel, the one of the wings.
The senior marine office is in one of those little cottages, or the ID card place is another cottage.
So he's the one that added those six, and then there's three other kind of a little bit bigger suites around the campus that he added.
So those buildings date back to 1926.
Yes. And then so in 1943, the first Navy presence actually took over those six cottages, the small ones between one of the wings and the academic buildings. We took over those, and they were initially sick bays, and they were named after the hospital ships at the time, which included the Relief, the Solace, the Comfort, the Repose, Mercy, and the Henderson.
That's kind of cool. The six cottages for our six hospital ships.
Yeah, so those were sick bays. Those actually eventually become officer quarters. And then in 1951, the Navy did a completely unprecedented move and took the postgraduate school that was initially in Annapolis, Maryland.
Because it was at the Naval Academy.
Yep. And they shifted lock, stock, and barrel to here at Monterey.
In 1951.
That included 500 students, 100 faculty and staff, and thousands upon thousands of pounds of books and equipment. Just like up and moved. It was like, all right, get in the truck.
Wow. I would hate to do that travel claim for that PCS move.
That would be so intense.
I will say, like, at Naval Postgraduate School, they have the history of the school on the wall of Root Hall.
There is the school history of all the programs and...
Yeah. And having been at the Naval Academy, the yard is small, yes, right? So the Naval Academy, you know, we don't call it a base or a camp. We can call it a campus, but we call it the yard. Yes. But it's way smaller than, unless you include the annex on the other side of the river. But yeah. I would say the yard is much smaller than campus here. Well,
I would say academically wise, yes. But if you were to include like Bancroft Hall and that kind of stuff, because that's Hospital Point, the whole kind of campus.
It would be bigger. Yeah. Because an outer loop was bigger. That's a big move. But yeah, I always wonder, I was like, how would the Naval Postgraduate School be at the Naval Academy? Because we maximize out all of the living spaces and the academic meals. Yeah.
And like, we're constantly like pushing at the boundaries.
Especially with that many students and faculty.
I mean, it was back in the day. I don't know the numbers of what the Naval Academy classes were like then, but I'm fairly certain they were below the 4,000 that is there today. But still, 1951, can you think of like travel and the travel availability of what we had to do? Good thing that this particular place was accessible by rail.
Although I'm not going to complain that the Naval Postgraduate School was moved to Monterey, California.
So that ends the history portion of trying to find where all of these spirits came from.
Join us next time when we connect the dots from the history of the Del Monte Hotel to the hauntings.
Thanks for joining us in the Trident Room. For more information about today's guests and topics, please visit the show notes online at nps.edu/Trident Room Podcast. The Trident Room podcast has been brought to you by the Naval Postgraduate School Alumni Association and Foundation. For questions, comments, and suggestions, please email us at Trident Room Podcast Host @nps.edu.